Due to the graphic nature of this cult's crimes, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes discussions of graphic material that some people may find offensive. We advise extreme caution for listeners under 13.
Hi, I'm Greg Polson.
And I'm Vanessa Richardson.
And this is Cults. Today, we're going to return to our investigation of the Apostles of Infinite Love, a religious cult which adheres to strict religious rigor and absolute theocracy that led it into several decades of conflict with the Quebec police.
If you want to listen to any previous episodes of Cults, you can find them on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify, or on our website, parcast.com, spelled P-A-R-C-A-S-T.com.
And don't forget to subscribe while you're there, because a new episode comes out every Tuesday. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast, and on Twitter at Parcast Network. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening.
Excommunicated Roman Catholic priest Michel Collin proclaimed himself Pope and started his own sect, the Apostles of Infinite Love, in France in 1950. The sect grew into a full-blown destructive cult in 1961 when Collin recruited Jean-Gaston Tremblay, a radicalistic priest from Canada, to his cause. Collin continued to spread the good word around Europe, while Tremblay focused on an enclave of 300 followers in Canada.
By the mid-1970s, Collins and his protege, Jean-Gaston Tremblay, claimed that they had as many as 120,000 followers all over France, Canada, and the Americas. The largest group of 300 lived in a Quebec commune, cloistered from the world and under Tremblay's pastoral care.
In part one of our two-part episode, we investigated Michel Collin and Jean-Gaston Tremblay, the leaders of the Apostles. We discussed how Collin's visions prepared him to declare himself Pope, and how Tremblay eventually stole that mantle and the leadership of the Apostles away from Collin.
In part two, we're widening our focus to the members of the Apostles of Infinite Love, both past and present. We'll learn what drew people to uproot their lives and move to the Quebec compound, as well as the cult's history of abuse allegations and clashes with the authorities.
So many people risked it all and uprooted their lives to follow the teachings of two excommunicated, self-crowned popes. How did Collin and Tremblay sway devoted Catholics away from the Catholic Church and into the Apostles of Infinite Love?
Although the Apostles are a strict fundamentalist group, their rigid guidelines and confidently old-fashioned doctrine seemed like a refuge to some believers.
I call upon Chairman Khrushchev to halt and eliminate this clandestine, reckless, and provocative threat to world peace and the stable relations between our two nations.
That was President John F. Kennedy attempting to defuse tensions with the USSR during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
In the 1960s and 70s, the world was enveloped by the Cold War, teetering on the edge of nuclear annihilation. To add to the stress for Canadian Catholics, the Quebecois government went through a change known as the Quiet Revolution. This was a period of intense cultural and socio-political shifts, which ended in the election of a liberal province leadership and the secularization of a formerly more religious government. Traditionalists were very upset by this quiet revolution, and they saw their ways of life threatened by the new modern liberalism.
Those with turbulent lives, or who have witnessed the frightening insecurity of the outside world, sometimes turn to cults for reassurance. Cults like the Apostles offered a regimented way of life and a theological explanation for the world's chaos. They appealed to Catholic groups and families looking to preserve their old ways in the onslaught of modernity and social transformations occurring in the Quiet Revolution.
Vanessa's going to take over on the psychology here and throughout the episode. Please note, Vanessa is not a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist, but she has done a lot of research for the show.
Psychologist Margaret Singer conducted an extensive study on why people join cults, and she asserts that there's no particular type of person who's more likely to join a cult. Circumstances and timing are more important than personality in determining whether someone will be easily recruited into a cult like the Apostles of Infinite Love.
Anybody can be susceptible to the pull of a cult, depending on their emotional and psychological vulnerabilities at the time they're approached. We are all constantly being persuaded and influenced by our friends, strangers, and environments. But our daily vulnerability to these influences changes over time.
Singer said, quote, "The ability to fend off persuaders is reduced when one is rushed, stressed, uncertain, lonely, indifferent, uninformed, distracted, or fatigued," end quote. For the already religious, they may seek consolation in these times of stress from their religious leaders.
Michael Cuneo explored this concept in the book, The Smoke of Satan, Conservative and Traditionalist Dissent in Contemporary American Catholicism. As we mentioned in our previous episode, the Roman Catholic Church was undergoing a huge religious overhaul around the same time as the apostles were rising to power in Quebec. Church leaders met for months at the Second Vatican Council in Vatican City to propose updates to the traditional Catholic doctrine and ceremonies.
Among other changes, this council allowed masses to be said in modern languages instead of the traditional Latin. They revised traditional Eucharistic prayers and shortened the liturgical calendar, all in an effort to make Catholicism more accessible and its leaders less opaque in an age of quickly declining religious devotion.
Several fundamentalist groups, including the apostles, strongly objected to these changes. They felt that the church was capitulating to the corruption of the modern world and that modernizing religious practices stripped them of their sanctity.
The apostles instituted their own reforms, though, such as the allowance of female priests and the abolition of clerical celibacy.
But this hypocrisy didn't appear to have bothered them, perhaps because they felt that including women and married people in the clergy harkened back to the earliest days of the church.
Cuneo observed during his study of the apostles that the Second Vatican Council disturbed the Catholic community. He said, quote, "The threat of religious change was already in the air, and the St. Jovita Monastery seemed to many of those who were drawn to it a refuge of simple and robust piety," end quote. When the Vatican appeared to be betraying their beliefs, these people were drawn to Colin and Tremblay as, quote, "self-professed mystics who had broken with Rome and who seemed to regard almost every aspect of the broader culture as irredeemably corrupt," end quote, just as they themselves did.
That Colin and Tremblay were alleged to have mystical powers and visions sent by heaven only solidified convictions that God had chosen the apostles over the wayward Roman church.
Mystical experiences are often an influential factor in recruiting for destructive religious cults like the Apostles of Infinite Love. The American Psychiatric Association wrote in their report, Cults and New Religious Movements, that, quote, "The role of transcendental or mystical experiences in both individual conversion and in group induction procedures can be very important. These experiences are integral to conversion and to continued membership for many charismatic sect members," end quote.
Converts to the Apostles of Infinite Love got a double dose of charismatic leaders in Michel Collin and Jean-Gaston Tremblay. Although Tremblay wrested control of the sect away from his mentor in 1968, the apostles still believed in the authenticity of Collin's visions and his claims to be the papacy.
The apostles, largely contained in their St. Jovita compound, still managed to recruit new disciples to the fold. According to Jean-Guy Vaillancourt, who studied right-wing Catholic sects in Quebec at the turn of the millennium, groups like the Apostles of Infinite Love sent emissaries to speak to small retreats, private homes, or prayer assemblies, and preach their particular doctrine to the religious discontent.
The apostles sent members door-to-door, selling religious calendars, and preaching to anyone who would listen, all over the Americas, particularly in rural or linguistically isolated Francophone Canadian communities. They also organized recruitment events at or just outside the St. Jovita compound and their Montreal convent. for those who needed a little extra push to join up.
A quick disclaimer, we've changed the names of some of the former members of this cult for their privacy and protection. We have not changed the names of anyone in the cult's leadership.
Ex-Apostle Lauren was born at the St. Jovita Monastery. Her family joined the Apostles of Infinite Love in the mid-1960s, part of the first wave of Tremblay's apostles to do so. She gave this account of her family's recruitment.
She said, quote, "A recruiter came to my family in Omaha and told them about this church that was founded by God himself because the Roman church was on its ways of corruption. It was also during the episode where the Roman Catholic Church underwent a lot of changes. Some people did not want to accept the changes, and this created a chaos within the Catholic religion. My parents, aunts, and uncles fell for the lies of the recruiter and moved to Canada after selling everything they had, giving the money and their goods to the cult and joined them," end quote.
The recruiter's charisma might have been enough to tempt Lauren's family to the St. Jovita compound, but something else made them stay. Lauren was not even born when her family first joined, but they remained there long enough for her to be raised at the compound.
According to Psychology Today, once followers are drawn into a cult, one of the first steps the leaders take in order to keep them there is to alienate them from their old lives and the outside world. In addition, leaders often expel anyone in the community who might express doubts to prevent the spread of such heretical ideas. The apostles were known to cast out members who questioned the authenticity of Colin and Tremblay's visions or who claimed to have begun experiencing visions themselves, lest they challenge the power of these leaders.
For the Apostles of Infinite Love, the monastic lifestyle inside the compound was extremely isolating. The compound had its own power and running water, and the residents participated in all the labor required to put food on the table and maintain the compound.
Other than the most devout clergy entrusted with recruitment missions, members had very little contact with the rest of Quebec outside the monastery walls.
They homeschooled all of the children at the compound, abhorring even Catholic schools for their liberal corruption. This prevented members from easily leaving the cult and limited their contact with any strangers who might challenge or disturb the leadership's teachings.
Unwittingly, the very same Catholic community that condemned the leaders of the Apostles of Infinite Love also made it easier for them to maintain control over those who joined their sect. By exiling and anathematizing the cult's followers, the church made it impossible for members who might have been thinking about leaving the apostles from seeking refuge with their old religious community.
Once they were enclosed within the walls of the St. Jovita compound, members of the cult faced stringent rules dictating their lives and worship, and harsh punishments if they failed to comply. Brother and sister apostles dressed in traditional outfits of robes and hoods, or veils, respectively. Lay people lived apart from the clergy, but were still expected to dress conservatively.
Personal property was outlawed, and all who joined were required to donate all their worldly goods and money to the cult, to be distributed as seen fit by Tremblay and his trusted apostles.
Members were put to work in the Editions Magnificat printing press, or at the nearby St. Veronique farm, which produced most of the food for the monastery.
Probably the harshest rules enforced by Jean-Gaston Tremblay, or Father John, as his congregation called him, were those concerning the children brought or born into the cult by their parents. The apostles adhered to a strict separation of single men and women. This extended to the apostles' children, who were divided by gender and raised by the Infinite Love clergy.
This left a vulnerable population, children, especially isolated and increasingly dependent upon adults who didn't necessarily have their best interests at heart.
We'll take a look at the experiences of the children at the St. Jovita compound after this.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now, back to cults.
A quick warning to our listeners. Greg and I will be discussing child abuse and sexual violence. Listener discretion is advised, and we advise extreme caution for listeners under 13.
The apostles are distinct from other famous cults in that they've never been officially found guilty of abuse by any court of law. However, the testimonies of countless former members and observers of the cult described horrific sexual abuse and violence in Tremblay's St. Jovita compound, most of which was directed at children.
Lauren recalls being separated from her parents at a very young age. All the children were kept away from their families, raised by the nuns or the priests instead of their parents. She said, quote, "I saw my family 3 times a year for 2 hours, Christmas, Easter, and sometime in the autumn. During these visitations, we were not allowed to kiss, hug, hold, or sit on your family's lap. All were evil and bad. I was to sacrifice all tendencies to loving my family because God said that if you were attached to your families, you could not be true to Him," end quote.
This is a complete break from the traditions of the Roman Catholic Church, which emphasizes the role of parents and godparents in raising children in the faith.
Separating children from their parents is a common method employed by destructive cults to make kids dependent on the cult and indoctrinate them early.
As severe as that sounds, familial separation was just the tip of the iceberg. Last week, we discussed the Hidden Children incident of 1967, during which Tremblay concealed several dozen cult children from the authorities and was briefly listed as one of Quebec's most wanted criminals.
In the 1970s, two of the apostles' married adult members had a falling out. Rob and Carol joined the cult a few years before with their 3 young children.
Rob eventually decided to leave the sect, but his wife did not follow and stayed behind with the children. Rob divorced his wife and petitioned the Canadian courts for custody of his children, who were still being held in the compound.
The courts awarded Rob custody, but Tremblay and the apostles once again refused to hand over the children, and Tremblay was found in contempt of court for refusing Rob access to his kids. Police raided the St. Jovite compound in 1978, but were only able to find one of Rob's children. It was presumed that their mother had fled to a cult-friendly family in Toronto with the other two.
Tremblay surrendered himself to the authorities in 1978 and was sentenced to 2 years in prison for his part in the whole ordeal. He only served 5 months before he was released back to his grateful followers.
As the Cult Education Institute observes, adult cult members are able to make a conscious choice when they join a cult like the Apostles of Infinite Love. They are swayed by charismatic leaders and preyed upon in moments of vulnerability, but their membership is voluntary. The same cannot be said for their children. Children born or brought up in cults have no choice in their participation. The best they can do is survive the experience.
Even when they do survive, cults, like the Apostles of Infinite Love, must leave psychological scars on former child members.
Cults are especially terrible for children, who often don't understand the world outside their commune and who have no control over the direction of their lives until at least early adulthood. In cults like the Apostles of Infinite Love, where children are raised communally instead of by their parents, kids often exhibit emotional and educational developmental problems.
To what degree have those ideas permeated their being, and to what degree do these ideas interfere with them fitting into the world that you and I accept as normal?
That was Dr. Bruce Perry, former chief of psychiatry at Texas Children's Hospital, discussing the difficulties child cult members have relating to a world that seems entirely alien to anything they've known.
Raised in groups by nuns or priests, it's possible that some of the children of the Infinite Love community suffered from a lack of what psychologists call attachment.
Attachment is the critical bond formed between an infant and its mother, or primary caregiver, and is critical for early development of emotional and interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm. Psychologists Van der Kolk, McFarlane, and Weissot wrote, quote, "Trauma early in the life cycle fundamentally affects the maturation of the systems in charge of the regulation of psychological and biological processes," end quote. Deprivation of proper caregivers and key early childhood socialization quote, makes these individuals vulnerable to develop destructive behavior against self and others, learning disabilities, dissociative problems, and distortions in concepts about self and others, end quote.
But the St. Jovita branch of the Apostles of Infinite Love was accused of much more severe crimes than neglect. Tales of child abuse and sex abuse plagued them throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s, with several former members coming forward after departing the compound to allege misconduct.
Lauren was one such ex-apostle, and she spoke freely about the horrors she experienced while she was a child in the cult in the early to mid-70s.
Lauren described daily beatings and hard physical labor prescribed to children as young as toddlers. She outlined an incident during which she was assigned to chop vegetables with a dangerous mandolin as a small child. She was distracted by something else in the kitchen and ended up slicing off the tip of her finger, which was never attended to by an outside physician. Her finger is still shorter on that hand.
This place is nothing other than a reenacted hell on earth, she said of the constant physical violence and sexual abuse. She confessed that, quote, when I was 5 years old, I tried to kill myself, end quote.
That was not the last attempt she made. And even when she escaped the cult at 17, she struggled with issues brought on by the lack of proper counseling and the memories of the abuse. Her early childhood attachment issues made it difficult for her to connect to normal society. And she said she later lost herself in drugs and other addictions.
The compound at St. Jovita was also accused of neglecting its young members' education. This, in combination with the growing number of child abuse rumors, led the Quebec authorities to launch an investigation into the cult from 1993 through 1999.
One former member, having left the Apostles as a child decades before, was surprised to be contacted by the Quebec police in 1996.
Memories that seemed buried by time came flooding back as the ex-apostle dug through her collection of photos, documents, and belongings from her stay at the Quebec complex. She said, quote, memories long gone or incomplete were suddenly being played back like little movie clips. I found myself crying, going around in circles, and even pulling at my hair at the frustrations of having to relive it all, end quote.
This ex-member was able to uncover the psychological scars left by the cult's unorthodox approach to child-rearing and education. She thought those wounds had healed, but discovered they were still just as deep as ever, simply ignored. Quote, like an internal festering cancer, the damages, psychological and emotional, were simply invisible. I was shocked to discover that those damages were obviously much more long-term than I had thought, end quote. So she, like many other former apostles, turned to the internet for support.
In 1999, the Quebec police raided the St. Jovita compound and seized 20 children. The kids were temporarily placed in the care of foster facilities and psychologists who evaluated the children for signs of emotional and physical abuse.
The case took a turn when three teenage sisters, removed from the apostles in the raid, petitioned the courts for permission to return to the cult. Judges deemed them old enough to make their own decisions, and the petition was granted. The sisters returned to the apostles.
But the sisters may have been outliers among the children of St. Jovita. Jean-Gaston Tremblay and three of his highest-ranking associates, two women and one man, were charged with child abuse after 15 former members filed accusations against the cult leadership with the Quebec police. The accusations identified assaults against seven boys and one girl living in the compound.
A Canada-wide arrest warrant was issued for Tremblay and his associates, and on April 28, 1999, Tremblay surrendered to the police. He wore the traditional apostle clergy attire of a floor-length brown robe and a crucifix.
Despite the long history of accusations by former members, the police failed to find sufficient evidence of child abuse after the 1999 raid, and the sex charges against Tremblay were dropped.
Unlike the 1968 Hidden Children incident, however, the authorities did not return any more children. besides the sisters who petitioned for the return to the cult. Instead, the Quebec authorities returned most of the kids to their families on the condition that they be raised outside the compound. Two of the children remained in foster care.
Over half the children removed from the Apostles during the raid were not legal residents of Canada and lacked documentation. Several were residing in the compound without their parents, who had sent them to live in Tremblay's commune as an alternative to a proper religious boarding school.
The nine American kids were escorted to their parents across the border, and arrangements were made to send the others back to their home countries in Europe and Ecuador.
Quebec passed a law banning children from being raised in a cloistered environment to prevent cults like the Apostles of Infinite Love from being able to control the socialization and education of children. But Tremblay and his associates were allowed to return to the St. Jovita compound, where they continued to preach the sect's doctrine to the remaining adult members.
Tremblay still professed that the Apostles were meant to be a light in the darkness, to lead mankind out of the corruption of the future. He wrote in his late 90s manifesto, Peter Speaks to the World, that, quote, "The true church of Jesus Christ, which God has charged us to direct, is the ark of the new times, raised up by providence to save a portion of Christendom," end quote.
Although Tremblay largely abandoned his mentor Michel Collins' references to aliens and UFOs, the church still believed that the end of days was imminent.
Cult researcher Michael Cuneo visited the St. Jovita compound in the late 90s. As part of his investigation of the group, he found that the Apostles of Infinite Love were once again preparing for Armageddon, this time scheduled to occur at the turn of the new millennium, the year 2000. Father Simon, a leading member of the Apostles' clergy, told Cuneo that, quote, "We are currently living in the end times. We are experiencing the beginning of the chastisement. The denouement will likely take place around the year 2000, end quote.
To be fair to the apostles, there is rhetoric in the Bible and an official Roman Catholic canon about the end of days.
But it's different to say that the apocalypse will come sometime in the future than it is to say that the end of the world is imminent. For most traditional Catholics, preparing for the apocalypse is a secondary concern, something to prepare for, but only in the far distant future. But as Cuneo said, quote, "For the infinite love community, there is nothing more important," end quote.
There are more and more UFO cults. There are more people who believe Jesus is coming back, that Armageddon is going to take place. My prediction is that there'll be a vast upswell in the number of destructive cults and charismatic figures who are receiving visions. And unfortunately, I think a number of them will involve violence.
That was Stephen Hassan, author of Combating Cult Mind Control, in an interview predicting an uptick in destructive cults activity as the millennium, a popular doomsday date, approached. He was right, at least in regard to the Apostles of Infinite Love.
The Infinite Love community has always been unwilling to reveal too many of its secrets to the outside world. When Michael Cuneo visited the compound in the early 90s, several of his more challenging lines of questioning were stonewalled. Members were not even permitted to talk about their previous lives outside the monastery. They said, quote, "It is against our community regulations to discuss our pre-conversion lives," end quote.
Cuneo did not appear overly concerned by this reticence, attributing it to a healthy sense of privacy. But others, like cult expert Rick Ross, see the members' silence as a symptom of cultic repression, not personal discretion.
Members who joined the Apostles of Infinite Love in their adulthood remain relatively mum on their own experience, but those who joined as children or who were born into the cult were much more likely to speak out.
For example, the Apostles of Infinite Love had not heard the last of Rob's family. In 2001, Rob's mid-30s son Jeffrey filed a $2.5 million suit against the sect on charges of physical and sexual abuse by Tremblay and other high-ranking members of the cult.
He described specific incidences of sexual abuse by both Jean-Gaston Tremblay and another high-ranking apostle by the name of Benoit Garand during which the accused confronted the prepubescent Jeffrey in the shower and inappropriately touched him.
Mike, another former member who belonged to the Infinite Love community for almost 25 years, told the Globe and Mail, a Canadian newspaper, that a common strategy was for high-ranking male members of the cult to offer to wash the victim clean of sin and then conduct a confession that involved intimate touching and stroking.
And Philip, Mike's brother, alleged that several adult apostles raped him as a teenager until he finally escaped the St. Jovita compound.
After these accusations, the apostles of Infinite Love all but dropped off the map until 2011, keeping to themselves until the cult's longtime leader died.
Jean-Gaston Tremblay died on New Year's Eve 2011 at the St. Agathe Hospital in Canada, just one day before another popular apocalypse date, 2012, rolled around. But the apostles did not flame out with the death of their charismatic leader, nor is their story over.
Our story will continue in a moment, right after the break.
And now, back to cults.
Jean-Gaston Tremblay was succeeded by Michel Lavallee, known as Father Maturin de la Mer de Dieu within the St. Jovita Infinite Love community. Unlike his predecessors, Lavallee does not claim to be Pope.
The Apostles of Infinite Love has now existed in some form or another for over 70 years, despite their long history of abuse allegations and run-ins with the police and other church leaders. The compound at St. Jovita still exists, and there are still a handful of devotees in residence there. There are other house communities all over Europe and the Americas, but none of them boast the centralized power and influence that the Quebec apostles did under Tremblay's leadership.
Despite this, the apostles still publish religious periodicals, still recruit members, and still prepare for the end of days that their founder Michel Collin predicted back in the late 60s. They continue to defame the wider Roman Catholic Church for corruption and sin.
If you take a look at the official website for the Apostles of Infinite Love, you will be greeted with the following message, quote, "For more than 50 years, the order has been fighting against all the abuses that have led to the decadence of the clergy, the religious state, and Christian society. God established it as a rampart against the almost universal apostasy that has invaded Christianity and in particular the Roman Church," end quote.
The apostles haven't made the news since Tremblay's death and have been remarkably quiet since the 1999 raid. They're slowly disappearing from the public consciousness. But for those who grew up in the cult, the memories will never fade.
Jill Mitten conducted a series of psychological surveys on survivors of cults, particularly those who were raised in destructive cults as children. Even after escaping the influence of groups like the Apostles of Infinite Love, the emotional and psychological wounds inflicted in early age linger into adulthood and can make it difficult for survivors to adapt to normal society. Mitten concluded that, quote, "second-generation adult survivors of cults face particular difficulties not only during their childhood but also upon leaving the group, because they face assimilation into a culture that is not just alien to them, but also one that they have been taught is wicked and to be hated," end quote.
The children of the apostles, like Lauren, certainly experienced difficulty integrating into that corrupt society once they were removed from the sect's influences.
Former members keep tabs on the current movements of the sect, trying to make sure large-scale abuses like those perpetrated at the St. Jovita compound can never happen again.
Currently, the Apostles of Infinite Love is registered as a religious nonprofit with the Canadian authorities. But ex-members worry about the excessive revenue that the nonprofit generates, as well as the rash of recent real estate purchases the group has made.
In 2008, La Presse reported that the Supreme Court of Canada had blocked the Infinite Love community's attempts to build a hydroelectric power station in Quebec by allowing the city of Brébeuf to expropriate the land. The apostles made almost $800,000 in revenue in 2016, and their involvement in apparently unconnected ventures, like a nut and candy shop in Michigan, raises more than a few eyebrows.
The Apostles of Infinite Love continue to operate all around the world in relative obscurity now that their two leaders are gone. Michel Collin and Jean-Gaston Tremblay leveraged their religious influence and supposed mystical connections with heaven to recruit thousands of members to their cult. They turned a period of uncertainty in the Roman Catholic Church into a radical fundamentalist movement that swept across the Western Hemisphere.
But now that Collin and Tremblay have both passed, there is no central charismatic leader to take over the Apostles of Infinite Love cult. The church is now a collection of smaller sects rather than one big destructive cult as it was in its height.
The apostles may have fallen out of the public eye, but we should not. They are still dangerous. They are still active. They are still amassing land, capital, and loyal members.
Thanks again for tuning in to Cults.
If you want to listen to any previous episodes of Cults, you can find them on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or on our website, parcast.com, spelled parcast.com.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review or tell us what you think on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram as @Parcast and Twitter @ParcastNetwork.
It seems simple, but it really helps our show.
And once again, thanks for listening. Cults was created by Max Cutler and is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound designed by Russell Nash, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire, Carly Madden, and Jeanette Manning. Cults is written by Colleen Bradley and stars Greg Polson and Vanessa Richardson.